This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
You're doing it again. Mess not here.
Why? I had to. Part of a deal.
With who?
We'll find out. It was requested.
Oh, okay. 12:04 in the box continues. TSN 1200. It's Steve Lloyd, Kenny Walls with you today. Kenny, a little double duty, a little co-hosting, a lot of producing. Still to come on the show. Just got a note from Dean. Got a plane to catch. Going to be a little bit earlier. So later this hour, not at 1, we'll hear from the voice of the Sens as our Sens at NHL insider. And right now we go to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline as well. Welcome in our old friend Ian Mendez from The Athletic. Mr. Mendez. Good afternoon. How are you? How's your shoveling? How's your driveway and all that?
Just finished another run through of the shoveling. It's nice, the light snow, but haven't had my side street plowed yet, so I'm waiting for the big pile at the end of the driveway, which is inevitable. But now, listen, this was, I know you had a bit of a tough drive heading home yesterday when you wrapped up pre, and you did send it, you sent me a warning text. And
yes.
You said, heads up, it's going to be a tough drive. So I thought, oh, no. Leaving the rink last night, I think I waited till about 10:40. It wasn't bad. I got to give this city credit. Queensway was pretty good last night, 416, Hunt Club, all that stuff. Pretty good. So it wasn't as treacherous as I thought it would be.
Yeah, Ian, it's just because Lloydie left earlier than others. Mm-hmm. So he had the tough time. Claire Hanna just tweeted, and she has the unpopular opinion that she actually enjoys shoveling snow. What's your take? Hot take.
This is what. First of all, listen, Claire Hanna is like, let's wait. Let's fast forward Claire Hanna. You wait 10, 15 years and we'll see. You know, get to Lloydie in my age and we'll see if you enjoy shoveling snow. But I'd also like to know, I think that is also tied to, like, how much is Claire Hanna shoveling? Is she shoveling a small little, like, is she an apartment building? Is she, like, what's the deal here? Is it a full driveway? There's a little context that's needed here.
Well, I could also say Western tough as well. Okay. We could throw a compliment that way.
Claire, listen, she has the Western toughness thing going, but she also spent a lot of time in Vancouver, like I did.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Makes you super soft.
That's true, too.
Super soft.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, there is that. Now, I'll say this. I'm glad that it was a much easier drive. So I decided I left. I watched the first period, and I thought, oh, man, I got to get out of here while I can. In the first intermission, I'll watch the rest of the game at home because I was anticipating it was going to be awful. And the plows hadn't done their work yet. It was still in the middle of, like, wow. That was one of the worst drives I've ever had leaving the rink. It was bad. But then they got it all done in time for everybody to get out of there after the game, so it sounds like it was much better. I got the same report from others, Ian, so I'm glad that it was much, because that was not fun for me, and it's all about me. So there you go.
Yeah, we know that. And by the way, that was me that requested the Righteous Brothers, only because I was in my car yesterday, and I listened to a good chunk of you and Matt, and I enjoyed the dumbfounded sound of your voice when that song came on yesterday. I'm like, we need to replicate this. We need to replicate this today.
Oh, yes. Man. Okay, well, wanted to talk to you here because you and I were trading some notes on this, and you said it to me first, and I the same feel, and I go back to, we had a good discussion on the pregame show with Shooter and when Gord joined us. And Gord speaks to the DJ Smith. Then we run that at every pregame show. People know that. And I was kind of, it was reinforced to me the way DJ reacted when Gord was just part of one of his questions involved. All right, you know, coming off a couple losses, you know, 13 points out of the playoff, blah, blah, blah. And DJ made, we're not talking playoffs. All right. We're talking about the next game. And I'm sensing kind of a different tone. Right around the group right now, and they played very well last night. It was a great game. So many positive things out of that game. You're sensing the same type of thing, aren't you, right now? With all right, let's stop with the. If we have another good January, like we had another good December, we can get closer to playing these meaningful games. I'm sensing a different message right now, aren't you?
You know what? And I think the breaking point was those back-to-back losses Friday and Saturday against Pittsburgh and Winnipeg. And I think if you go back a week ago, before the home-and-home against Pittsburgh, they were 9 points out of a playoff spot, and the Penguins were holding down the last spot. And I think the feeling was if they could have swept those two games in regulation time, there was a scenario where they would have been 5 games out of a playoff spot. And remember, the talk was they were pitching. It's a mini playoff series. This is, and I think what happened was Pittsburgh took 3 out of 4 points, and I think you could really feel the air come out of the balloon. And then the Saturday game against Winnipeg, and I know, Lloydie, you did, if I'm not mistaken, you did pre and post of that Winnipeg game. And,
yep.
Like, that's a Stanley Cup caliber team. And so I think when I went into the locker room Saturday, and DJ Smith has been so, I think for the most part with him, he's positive. Like very rarely, like, he's almost positive to a fault. I would sometimes, I wish this guy would call out some of his players publicly more often, but he is a player's coach to the nth degree. But he was sour on Saturday night. Like, and he basically called out Batherson and DeBrincat with the comment of, hey, we got too many guys with minuses, and that's not going to happen anymore. That's on me. Then we went into the room, and now granted, in hindsight, I think we could have or should have realized, you know, Josh Norris was hurt. And I think some of his frustration of the injury seeped out into his post-game interview. So I'll give him a mulligan on that. But like Claude Giroux and some of the other, I'm trying to remember who else we spoke to. They were just really, really, and despondent might not be the right word, but they were frustrated. And then you fast forward to Monday, and then there was that extended 15-minute conversation amongst the DeBrincat, Giroux, and DJ Smith. And there's obviously been a reset here. And I think Claude Giroux kind of alluded to this yesterday. He said, there was a lot of frustration here. We spent 2 good days having good meetings, good practices. We're going to reset. So I think I understand the fans' sentiment, and maybe even to some extent the front office's sentiment, which is, you're probably going to have to start to look at big picture here because a playoff race is conceivably out of the question. But if you're DJ Smith and the players, you're not trained that way. You're just trained to win games.
Yep.
And that's what I think we're going to see out of them moving forward. I think a realistic expectation of this team, I know it's disappointing because we wanted them to play meaningful games. If they can get to about 85 points, I think you can say at the end of the year, okay, there was a 14 or 15 point improvement year over year. You know, maybe at that point we can have a better conversation about some of these big picture things. But I personally can't entertain the playoff conversation right now. I hope to be wrong. I hope they go on some Hamburglar-esque run. But, you know, the season has kind of shown us that that's probably not in the cards for them.
What's the mentality when you're still have, well, just under half the season to go, and your coach says, okay, we're not going to talk about playoffs. And yes, you have that mentality as a player that you're going out there, you're playing game by game, but being out of it for the umpteenth year in a row at the just past the midway point of the season has to be very demoralizing for the players.
Yeah, I think so, Kenny. And I think what Ottawa wants to do, and I think this is really important. If you go back, think of those really good, remember when the Florida Panthers had that like kind of collection of really good young players? It was like Olli Jokinen and Steven Weiss and that group, and there were like a whole bunch of high draft picks, and they just couldn't get over the hump. And at some point, it became a losing culture. And I think the same thing happened in Edmonton, kind of, you know, about 10 years ago. They had a really good group of guys, Eberle and RNH and Taylor Hall, and like these were high picks. Yakupov's in there, and they had high picks. And Buffalo, too, you go into the kind of the peak of the Eichel era with Reinhardt, and you just don't want a losing culture to become pervasive inside the locker room. And I think they've got the right mix of guys. Like, I don't think this sits well at all with Brady Tkachuk. And I think this is why I like Claude Giroux coming in. And I know Claude, at times in Philadelphia, things certainly went off the rails from there. What I like about Claude Giroux is, I think this is exactly the type of personality they needed in the room. They needed somebody who's a little bit of a perfectionist, a little bit of a demanding person who's going to sometimes break a stick on the bench and sometimes be a little bit sharp with the media and sometimes, you know, kind of give that stare. Like, I don't want to be on the receiving end of a Claude Giroux stare, and, you know, and And I can only imagine what it would be like to be inside that room. So I think the key now is stop the bleeding here. Like, don't let that mentality sink in that here we go again and it's a losing culture. You got to change the narrative here at some point. And it's disappointing. I haven't looked at the overall standing today, but I think, are they not, what, 24th overall or whatever? Like, that's disappointing. That's not what we were sold heading into this year, and that's certainly not their internal expectations. I think it's fair to say it's disappointing, but that they have to figure out a way to get rid of that. You just don't want that to become you become complacent and accepting of the fact that losing happens here.
All right, so next up, this is what I like about the stretch of games they have before. They got three left before this break coming up. I mean, you're going to be up to play the Leafs in Toronto tomorrow night, and then you're back-to-back against the Habs. So, if you know, you should always be game-by-game, shift-by-shift, the cliches, whatever, right? But, I like the fact that they're playing these next three games against these kind of traditional rivals. You know, just make sure the juices are flowing here. And there's some positive energy coming off the win last night. We'll get into Ridley Gregg and a few other things here. But I don't know. I think this sets up nicely for the Ottawa Senators to maybe have a strong run of play. Like, it's going to be tough to win tomorrow night. Leafs are an excellent team. But have a strong run of emotional play, try to get the best out of their group the next few games.
You know, the tricky thing, I think, for Ottawa, and you're right, basically they have three games in the next, I think, like 18 days or something like that, like 17 days. Like, they're off.
They play the 11th against the Oilers after the break. That's their first game.
Yeah, so I think, it's something like three games in 16 days or 17 days. So there's no reason to not kind of empty the tank, so to speak. The thing that gives me a little bit of pause for concern here, and it obviously happened last night, was that injury to Cam Talbot, and now you think, I know Mandalizzi's been recalled, and I figure they'll split the, like, if you're looking ahead, you're thinking, okay, they'll probably go Forsberg in Toronto Friday. I'd imagine you probably have to go Mandalizzi, do you not, on Saturday, and that's probably the better place to start him anyway, is at home against a team that is probably less intimidating than Toronto, but it's going to be a bit of a challenge here. But these are the games, you're right. You want to see this team kind of get up for those games. Again, the disappointment was that home-and-home against Pittsburgh, where you felt like, you never want to say the season's on the line in January, but it kind of felt like the season was on the line. And they didn't quite deliver the way that you wanted them to. And I think for Ottawa fans, for them, they look at these three games, and they probably do look at these as these are games that matter to the fan base. They want to be able to go into Toronto and beat the Leafs. They want to be able to sweep a home and home with Montreal. And so this is going to be a really fun three games. And I know they're hey, listen, and then you guys have dealt with this at the radio station. I'm sure there's some fans who have kind of untethered themselves from kind of being emotionally attached to the team given their state of the standings, but boy, it's pretty hard to not tune in to Ottawa, Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, regardless of what the standings say.
And when you talk about big picture and the remainder of the season, what do you anticipate this club doing? Because in the past years, we've seen trades made, younger players coming in, and the team play actually improving, and whether that's due to teams taking them lightly, whatever the case may be, the team's play has actually improved in the second half of the year, or do they stay the course, try and keep some of the veterans, make that push? Pierre Dorion talked about going out and still acquiring that top four defenseman, even if it is a rental, potentially. What do you see this team doing leading up to the trade deadline?
Like, I think you have to go into this. Like, you have to strip aside, especially if you're Pierre Dorion, you have to strip aside your emotions, right? And I think even if you're a fan, you have to approach, like, there's only certain points in the NHL calendar that really seemed to matter. July 1st and kind of that week around the draft, that matters. Trade deadline matters. And I think you can't go into this without looking at this with a very clear, level-headed, or through a clear, level-headed lens. And that lens says that you are kind of hanging out with the Habs and the Flyers in the standings. And if you went around the league and asked, what is Chuck Fletcher going to do in Philadelphia, or what is Kent Hughes going to do in Montreal, You wouldn't say, well, I'm pretty sure they're going to probably be buyers here and try to make a run. You'd be like, no. The standings say you're a seller. So, look, this isn't where anybody wanted to be, but it is where you are. And I think you need to look at your roster for next season and say, what pieces do we realistically say are going to be part of this? And you have to ask yourself, is Travis Hamonic going to be part of this? Is Nick Holden going to be part of this? Is Austin Watson? What I'd love to see in an ideal world, and I think if the math, and I looked this up about a week ago, so I could be off, but I think a guy like Derek Brassard could potentially play his 1,000th game the week of the trade deadline. Like, would it not be ideal? Mm-hmm. Let the hometown guy basically play his 1,000th game at home, and then go and see if you can find a spot for him. Does somebody need kind of a 12th or 13th forward? He's got a reputation and a nickname of Big Game Brass for a reason. And, you'd love to see, who wouldn't love to see Derek Brassard, A, get his 1,000th game in Ottawa, but B, maybe just go get one last chance at the Stanley Cup. So I think you need to look at those guys, but there's not going to be any needle movers here unless they go down the DeBrincat path, which I don't think they will. I think it's too early to make a call one way or the other on Alex DeBrincat. That would be the only needle mover where you could say, wow, they're going to make a trade and it's going to be a seismic proportions. Every other deal that could potentially be on the table for a pending UFA, I'll even throw Tyler Mott potentially in that mix. It feels like kind of you'll get a draft pick back, and maybe that's about it. But I don't see them having to do anything major or drastic other than just move any parts that you don't see being part of your team next season, and hopefully allow. I'd love to see Jacob Bernard-Docker come up and play a few games. I think people feel the same way about Igor Sokolov and a couple of other guys. That's about it. And I think you saw, again, a little bit with Ridley Gregg last night. Sometimes just allowing a young kid to come play kind of reinvigorates not only the roster, but I feel like the fan base as well.
Let me throw this at you. This is one of the questions I had for the panel last night on the pregame show. And I asked it, vaguely. And then I said, okay, let's get specific here and kind of drill down on this. And it's one of your favorite types. It's kind of like you used to call it Would You Rather Wednesdays, Ian, didn't you, with Lee? Okay.
Right.
All right, Would You Rather. It's so the way I kind of phrased it was, if you had to move a premium piece to acquire this much-talked-about top 4D that we've been talking about forever, right, and we know that the GM is still looking for that piece. So if you had to move a premium piece, and let's be honest, you will have to, right? You're not just going to acquire this mythical top 4D for a typical and a second-round pick forum trade. Would you rather move a current veteran top 6 forward or move a premium young player? And then I drill down on it, okay? Would you move an Alex DeBrincat or a Drake Batherson even, or a Greg, a Pinto, and let's say your draft picks in the top 10 this upcoming draft here? What would you rather do if you're the GM, if you go, you know what, we need this piece? And obviously the piece is somebody's going to be here. It's not a rental. It's a core piece that you're bringing in, and it's painful to give up to get. Those two options.
Man, this is a Would You Rather Thursday. You know what's really frustrating, too, is you look at what the Avalanche paid to get Devon Taves a couple of years ago, or even to some extent, what are the Devils, Lloydy? What do the Devils give up to get Ryan Graves?
I get to look that up one.
Yeah, I think it was second or third or something like that.
Yeah.
Marino, they gave up Ty Smith and a pick, right?
Yeah. But anyway, so sometimes you look around and you're like, oh, man, maybe you don't have to give up that much. Okay, here's why I'd be hesitant to move the Pinto Greg / top 10 pick. And let's all agree that every single one of Ottawa's kind of blue chip upper tier prospects have graduated to the NHL. Like, Ridley Gregg, the last guy that you could say, maybe he could push into a top 6. I still feel he's like more of a middle 6 guy, high end, but like the Sandersons, the Stutzlers, the Brady, Kachucks, they're all here, okay? You start to look at the pipeline, and it's thin. And the reason why it's thin is you traded your number 7 overall pick in last year's draft. That's gone. You traded away your first round pick, which ended up being 4th overall in 2019 in the Matt Duchene trade. So in the last 5 years, if you think about this, again, try to look at this through a very kind of clear and objective lens. You're in the heart of what you've characterized externally as a rebuild. you trade away two top five picks or top seven picks. Boy, and you know, and I know the jury's out on Tyler Boucher, and so. But anyway, that's your sin is what I'm saying in that. So I'd be very hesitant to move that. You know, Batherson's on a really good contract. I think he's kind of become a little bit more of a power play specialist than I think anybody would have liked. I actually liked his game yesterday. I thought he was a little bit.
That was his best game in a while.
Yeah, yep. I saw a bunch of people saying on Twitter they thought that was his best game in a while. And DJ Smith actually said as much. You know, I think because he's got a sub $5 million cap hit, boy, it's got to have to be a really good deal to kind of make that go. The great question that's here is Alex DeBrincat. What do you do with him? Because I think at some point between now and July, there's no rush on this. I don't think there's a rush on this, but you do need to make a decision at some point on him. I don't think you can necessarily go into a walk year with him next year and risk him either A, going full Pasternak on you and kind of pricing himself out of your potential budget, or B, even worse, going Johnny Gaudreau on you, which is like he kind of plays out his last year and off he goes. The ideal scenario would be either he re-ups next year, you know he's part of your franchise, and away you go, or it's the Matthew Tkachuk where, hey, I'm not feeling it, don't take anything personally, let's get something done, and you get some tangible pieces back. Like that. So out of all of those options, I would say that one seems like the most palatable to me. But again, my option A would be to try to keep Alex DeBrincat in the fold.
All right. Last train of thought for you here, goaltending. I mean, it's I feel for Troy, man, because every year, just go to Belleville Senators and Hockey DB, everybody, and just look at the amount of goaltenders to at least play a game for Belleville each and every year the last few years. It's ridiculous how many goalies. And that's a trickle-down effect, right? You get injuries up top, and they've had injuries down below. They've got, like, Bebo's out. He's not even on the road trip right now. Sogard is with him, but he's hurt. He's not ready to go. Mandelazzi's recalled. He's the only guy left that you can recall that's under contract. Now, Marilyn is under contract, but he's overseas. So Mandelazzi's been recalled. Very curious to see. Here's hoping for the player and the team that the Talbot thing isn't that serious, Ian, after he left the game last night. Because, you know, early in the year, that's why they went and claimed Hellberg off waivers. There's no goaltender on waivers right now. Will Pierre Dorion, will his hand be forced maybe to just, I might have to get another goalie just to get through the rest of this season. Who knows?
Well, yeah, I mean, what the other day, Nedeljkovic was on waivers. You know, Hellberg was on waivers early this year. Boy, you know, for all of, listen, and I think DJ Smith takes the criticism in stride. The one thing I've always wished, I'd love to kind of assess DJ Smith a little bit more, is if he just had consistent and competent and capable goaltending. And I feel like in his 4 years, for whatever reason, that's kind of been his Achilles heel. I thought Forsberg played dynamite last year. Forsberg's been good this year too, and I think Talbot's been good this year, but they haven't done, and particularly in the month of January, they haven't played in the way in which you need them to play. And I think that to me, like, as we sit here, as much as we talk about this mythical top four defenseman that I feel like we've been speaking about this person like this for 4 years. My bigger question is, when this team's window to open to legitimately compete for a Stanley Cup, and that's not next year. Next year might be the year, I think we can have that conversation. Next year might be the year they open up to maybe be a playoff contender. We were hoping that was this year. It's not. So let's punt that to next year. I'm looking at 2026 and 2027 and 28. Who is the guy who's starting 50 games for you? Because right now I don't know the answer to that question. And that's a little bit concerning that you've got this wonderful core. I think we can all agree that's a great core. That's the missing piece. And what's scary, now you see Gustafson doing what he's doing in Mini, and you think, is that Broussard for Zibanejad? Like, in a different way, where you traded for a kind of a veteran that kind of helped you now in exchange for a young guy that you didn't think was going to work out, and now you're like, oh my goodness gracious, is Philip Gustavsson?
Well, and you didn't win two rounds in the playoffs with the asset you brought in to make that move, like you did with Broussard.
Exactly. The Broussard one, I think Broussard versus Zibanejad, you can, you know, probably justify it.
Gets ripped a little. That's just me. I think that gets ripped by some people a little bit too much. You got to remember the feeling at the time, right? And then they pivoted out of it, and they ended up with Gustavsson and JBD out of the deal. And they don't beat the Bruins in the first round. He was like a point a game, and he was awesome in that first round. I don't think they beat the Bruins without his. Anyways, that's not the point here of this conversation. Go ahead.
Yeah, the point is, I don't know who their goalie is going to be. When this window opens up, and you got to ask yourself, you know, how are you going to fill that void? Look, Colorado got it. Like, you can try and patchwork this thing with a Darcy Kemper, or, you know, something. Like, you don't necessarily have to. It's not 20 years ago where it's like, if you don't have Belfour, Waugh, Brodeur, or whatever, Hasek, you're not going to win. But they just need their guy. They need their guy that in 3 years from now is going to be in the prime of his career and ready to go. It could still be Anton Forsberg. I'm a big believer in him. I really like him, but I don't know. I think that's my biggest question. As much as we talk about the top four, if I'm looking forward, I'm like, that's my biggest question about this team in the future.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Should be fun. We got a back-to-back at the Leafs. They're home to the Habs, and then Tuesday, and then a bit of a break, and lots of positive momentum, hopefully, for Sens fans. That was a fun experience last night, especially with Ridly Greig, who we didn't really even get to. But I'll get into that a little bit more with Dean Brown when he joins us in a little bit here as well. Ian, enjoy. It's picking up again. We might have another shovel experience in our future. So have fun with that, and we'll chat soon.
All right. Thanks for having me, Dan.
All right. There's Ian Mendez from The Athletic. When we take when we come back, we'll take this break. Dean Brown en route to the airport, jumping on a little bit earlier for that very reason, as our Sens and NHL insider. We'll get more on the game last night and Greg's performance and look ahead to the Leaf game and what to expect. We'll do that next with the voice of the Sens on TSN 1200. Dean Brown, when we return on In the Box at TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
All right, welcome to it. 10:38. We got to get right to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline because our next guest has a plane to catch. And I want to know, you got a plow set up for, you know, a Newfoundland dog that can help clean the laneway, Dean? You know, any help with that this morning? There's a lot of snow out there.
Yeah, no, the Newfoundland dogs, they like to go and lie in it and bury their face in it and play in it, not so much cleaning it up. They're anti-cleaning it up. They want it to stay where it is. But we have a snowblower guy who has, you know, the big tractor with a snowblower on it, and he blows it all into the woods, so then the dogs just go in the woods and play with it there.
Okay, good stuff. All right, well, let's get to some important issues here. And that was a positive experience last night at Canadian Tire Center for many reasons, but we got to start on the ice with the play of Ridly Greig. I think we're all curious to see a shiny new toy, if you will, former first-round pick, playing very well in Belleville, pretty high-profile prospect in the organization, played very well at the World Juniors last summer, and here we go. He's going to step in, and you temper expectations, right? It's first game, might be a little bit of nerves involved. He's going to play with two very good wingers. He'll probably defer and won't shoot the puck enough. Ties the NHL record, 8 shots on goal in an NHL debut, plays wonderfully, picks up an assist. Dean, what didn't he do last night? That was awesome.
Well, you know what, Lloydie, but the only thing he didn't do was score, and he had a couple of good chances there. So, you know, I think you're right. I always, you know, try to temper my expectations when a kid is playing his first NHL game because, you know, when you're sitting there and you're opening that present, and it's a present you've been dreaming of your entire life, you know, there are emotions that happen on that day at that time that don't happen any other time in your life. And that's expected. And so, you know, oftentimes you don't get, you know, the best performance in the history of your career in your first game. And he's going to have lots of great, experiences in the game for sure, because he's a very good player and he's only going to get better. But that exceeded what I thought was, you know, probably going to happen. But you know, he made that happen. It wasn't happenstance. It wasn't a couple of lucky bounces. Everything the good that happened in his game last night for him and his line, it happened because he made it happen. And you know, that I think is good for the franchise, in that in the steps that you go through as an organization to get to a guy being a regular player on your NHL team and hopefully a guy that makes an impact in games, of those steps, you want to see at this stage of where he's at that he is a guy that makes you feel like all the decisions and your thought of him up until now are true. And right now, I'd have to think that, you know, when the NHL or the Senators scouting department and hockey ops are getting together and talking about Ridly Greig's performance, you got a bunch of guys nodding their heads saying, yeah, that's the kind of stuff we thought he could do. So, you know, now it's just onward and upward from there.
How much does it speak to his maturity level and competitiveness that he's able to go out and do that and right from the drop of the puck? He didn't look out of place for 1 second in the NHL. Just the maturity level and the compete that he has, that's been known from his time in minor hockey, that it's shown through at the NHL level as well.
Yeah, exactly, Kenny. And, you know, that maturity and everything, a lot of that comes from the fact that there's nothing about this world that he doesn't know. You know, it's not a small thing when you have a player whose father played. It's not just his ability to impart some knowledge about when you're taking a face off, you know, hook your right hand, or, you know, it's not that technical stuff. It's the fact that he's been in NHL dressing rooms since he was an infant. You know, when he was a kid, you know, he was playing with Claude Giroux in the dressing room when his dad was a teammate. You know, he was, you know, that's one of his idols from the days when he was running around in his sock feet in dressing rooms. He's been in this life all his life. So the things that might intimidate or be unfamiliar for a lot of other young players when they get to the NHL, he's been in this his entire life. And that leads to a kind of maturity where I think a lot of things that would have guys snapping their head around looking and what's that and what's this and what's that sound and where do I go and who do I sit, all that stuff, that is in no way upsetting to him, because he knows the life, knows the habits, what to say, what not to say. He knows when you're supposed to say anything at all. You know, so on a lot of people, as does almost every player like Brady Tkachuk, whose father played in the league, they have an understanding of the culture before they get in the culture.
Should be a lot of fun to watch him play against the Leafs tomorrow night and then back-to-back against the Habs as well. So Ridly Greig, huge story from last night. Nice win for the Sens, but there was other lineup shuffling that DJ Smith said would happen and did here. I want to talk about that third line a bit with Brassard and Pinto and Batherson. Now, Pinto gets an even strength goal, but it was kind of a power play goal, right, because the Islander just stepped onto the ice, and so it was nice to see him score. But, you know, Drake Batherson, much has been made, and because, you know, it's kind of one of those Bill Parcells things, right, Dean? You are what your record says you are. We can talk about how plus minus can be an overrated stat, but that's not good where he is at this point of the season. I think by everybody watching and everybody's kind of singing from the same songbook, fans, coach, I think media observing, all of it, that was one of Drake Batherson's best games in quite some time. He was really good start to finish.
Yeah, he was. And you know what? And maybe I'm oversimplifying this, but, you know, DJ and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. We were just sitting there and we were talking about Drake Batherson, and, you know, DJ was saying at the time, and he mentioned it to the media, I think yesterday or the day before, that, you know, Drake Batherson's plus minus is a little bit misleading. It's not, by no estimation is it good, not saying that, but, you know, some of those minuses are, you know, he's going off on a change, but he's still on the ice and somebody scores and he gets a minus. That's, you know, there's good parts and bad parts to it. You know, it's like, it's the same as if you're going off the ice when one of your team scores and you get a plus. But he has just been victim of a couple of those. But, you know, still, that plus minus is there, and it's real. And, you know, I said to DJ, I said, you know, in my humble opinion, I said, when Drake Batherson comes out on his first two shifts of a game, if he comes out and throws two hits each shift, four hits in his first two shifts. He doesn't have to throw another one in the game. That gets him into the game. If he's throwing a couple of hits before he's throwing a couple of shots at the net, he's generally a better player. And I look at last night's game, if you look at the first couple of shifts that he had, he was physical. And that, for whatever reason, to me anyway, it seems like that kind of gets him into a headspace where that offense follows that. But the thing that gets him into the game and makes him a better player, and most specifically a more conscientious player, is when he is a guy who uses that physicality early, and that seems to get him into the flow of his best game. You know, it's not just getting great chances on the power play and the rest of your game is suspect. You know, he just seems like if he gets a couple of hits in, that gets him into a mode where he's a better player. And I thought that happened last night.
A lot of positives from last night's game, Dean. Maybe the one negative was Cam Talbot going down to injury. Anton Forsberg came in, played great. Would you anticipate Forsberg playing from here until the break, playing every minute if Talbot's not able to go?
Yes, I think I would. It's not something that's part of the plan where you want to play goalies on back-to-back nights, but you got to remember that after the two games back-to-back, you got a couple of days before the Montreal game, and then you got a whole bunch of days as the break goes. So it's not like you're going to run him out of gas and then he won't be able to recover in a week. In a week, you know, he'll be on vacation. So I would anticipate that. And, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, Mandelazzi's a guy who's also had some injury problems down in Belleville. And I heard you guys documenting, you know, all the other injury problems they have to people other than goalies. But goalies is a big problem for them injury-wise right now. So I'm not sure that Mandelazzi is, a total 100% health-wise right now either. He's kind of the best of a dinged up bunch. I would personally be surprised if he gets a start. You know, you never know. If something gets out of hand, he may have to go in, but I would be surprised if the idea isn't just to have, Forsberg run these two games this weekend, finish up the stretch before the break in Montreal on Tuesday, and then, you know, see what happens over the break with Talbot and then make your choices after that about what your next option is.
Yeah, as I touch wood, as I say that, I think it really helps, doesn't it, Dean? You kind of mentioned it there. If the next game was a 3-4 and it was Monday, it was like, okay, maybe, right? But you get the extra day here. You play back-to-back, and then it's a Tuesday in Montreal. I think that might help things out just as long as, touch wood, Forsberg stays healthy, probably runs the table here.
Yeah, I would think so, Lloyd. But, you know, who knows? You know, it all depends on the mindset of the goalie coach, what Zach Burke thinks, and, you know, where Mandelazzi is, and, but I'm just saying, for me personally, I would be surprised if Forsberg just doesn't run the table going into the break.
The Sens were able to close out that game last night. Did you see anything different in being able to close out that game last night than maybe in previous exercises where they weren't able to?
Well, you know what? It seems when they get in trouble in those games, it's a failure to clear. You know, they too often have gotten into situations where they're trying to hang on to a lead or, you know, and when they get caught in their own end, they're still trying to make plays. And this team, even though the record hasn't shown it, but one of the things I think they've done far better in the last month is kind of taken on, that old Pittsburgh Penguin philosophy, you know, like when in doubt, just lob it to center and try and recover it in the neutral zone, but stop, you know, goofing around here. This is where all the danger is, so just get out of it. So, you know, it's sometimes hard to get players to balance that speech that you're always giving them, just generally an overarching speech about, you know, hang on to the puck, don't give the puck away. You're an NHL player, make a play, don't just give it away. And, you know, all those things. And so it's hard to move away from that and try and ask for something, you know, different from them. But it really is one of those safety valve plays where it seems like the older players have a better sense of when, you know, we've tried three times now to get the puck out. It's getting serious. Just get it out. Just out. No more trying to make a play. No more 4-foot, you know, pop pass. No more. Just get it out. And I think too often for this team you've had, and especially some of the younger players and some of the best players, your most skilled players, you know, like I think you can probably safely say that, you know, Brady at times and Chabot at times and Stützle for sure, trying to make plays when the best play is just get it out. And so I think that is a sign of maturity, that there's guys who are now in their game are sensing that. This has just been the internal clock is telling you this has been too long. We're not getting where we need to go here. Let's just pop it out and go try and recover it in the neutral zone. So I think that's kind of a sign of maturity. And, you know, just when that happens, it seems like there is less panic in your game because you aren't turning it over in your own zone in a one-goal game. So I think those two things kind of using that safety valve and just, you know, not being stubborn and not trying to make a play when it's just too dangerous to try and make another one if it fails. I think those two things have really been a sign of maturity. But sometimes it's hard to find those signs of maturity if a team is losing because you're not looking for them. There's so many other things that you're looking to be critical about that you don't look and say, but yeah, you know, they have gotten better at that part of their game, and that has been a good thing. And for me anyway, I think in fairness, that's one of the things that I look at and say, there's definitely other parts of their game where they have a lot of work to do. But that part of their game, I think they need to be given some credit for, you know, growing the maturity to know when there isn't a play there.
I know you probably heard when we had this discussion on the pregame last night when Gord and Shooter were on. Are you sensing a bit of a, this week after those losses in the weekend, just a bit of a different tone from DJ and just what this is about? Like, it was notable that when he kind of corrected, it's not the right word to use, but when in the interview with Gord, he said, no, we're not talking playoffs. Yeah. Like, when Gord just kind of, he just mentioned that in passing as part of a question here, and just a different feel around the group right now and mentality. Are you sensing that, Dean?
Yes, I think so. And I think it's just, it's just a mathematical realization. You know, when they got to the point where they were double-digit games out of the last wild card spot, that's a different kind of mindset. You know, even when you're six or seven games back, you still have the feeling that with a good week, you could make that up. And if you have a good week and a couple of other teams don't, you can. When you get into 10, 11, 12, 13 games out and you're at the end of January, you know, that is a hill that has been climbed before, but it is very, very rare. And if you're the coach, you can see right now that your team is not playing well. So when you look at that double-digit number of games you're out and you see that your team is not playing the kind of hockey that it would need to go on a 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-game winning streak to try and catch up, you know, you have to be honest with yourself about where you are as a team. Now, if you turn it around and that happens and you can somehow, you know, capture magic in a bottle and sprinkle it on everyone's cornflakes every morning, fantastic. But, you know, as a coach, coaches, the coaching staff, this one, everyone, you know, they really do have a real good sense for the most part about where their team is at. They're with them all the time. They're around them all day. They talk to them all the time, and they're frank, open discussions. And so, by and large, coaches know where their team is at. And I think DJ knows where his team is at, and we all know he can count. So I think you're right, Lloydie. I think we sense it outside, but I think that's only because it's gotten to the point where it's oozing outside now, and that's why and how you feel it.
And finally, give me another thought, because we were talking a lot about this yesterday leading in. It's like, ooh, what's going on with the Islanders? They've lost five in a row. They had one win in 12 or two wins in 12, and now it's like 2-13. They were in a playoff spot. They're not. Lou made himself available to the media, and he was at the rink yesterday in Ottawa, which is, okay, that's all right. Where we go from here, now it's not an awful game by them last night, but it's another loss, Dean. Where do the Islanders go from here, and should we be at all surprised if something drops out of the blue from Lou?
No, I would be very surprised, Lloydie, if it doesn't. Because the way this team has kind of morphed is, you know, we all admired how well this team could defend, and they got enough offense. Well, now some of their guys who have been consistent offensive performers in the past have gotten a bit older, and they can't generate points in the same way they used to. Palmieri can't, you know, Brock Nelson can't. Anders Lee can't, you know, and it's really, so the offense is Barzal. That's the offense. And what you've got is one line and three third lines. And when you get to the point now, as some of those older players get older, you find they can't check or defend as well. And so right now, the Islanders are in that horrible of all hockey situations in that you can't score and you can't defend. Well, the only thing after that is you look good in the uniform, and they do. But that doesn't help you win games. And so I can't see Lou not doing something, but I think it's a tough situation they're in, because one of the things that we talked about, you know, when J.G. Pageau signed there, you know, he is, in my mind, one of their best, most effective, and important players. But that being said, if you're looking at the salary distribution on your team, they are now caught, and I was talking to one of the Islander broadcasters yesterday about this, and he was the one saying, you know, they're kind of caught in the situation. If you're trying to make moves, the reality is that Pageau is one of your most important guys, but he's still a third-line center that makes $5 million. There's not a lot of people around the league that want to trade for a third-line center that makes $5 million, as good as he is. You know, and so that's one of the issues that they have. They, if you look at their UFA list, I think three of the guys that are going to be UFAs are $750,000 a year players. None of their big salary players are big number UFAs that are easy to move. And so Lou is in kind of a hard spot. And as it was, you know, said to me yesterday, he said, it's hard to make changes on a team where you can't score, you can't defend, you can't win, and you're at the cap. And I said, oh, man, that sounds eerily like Vancouver, you know, but that's kind of the place they're at right now. And but thinking that Lou is not going to do anything to try and change that, I think would be a mistake. We've all seen, you know, all three of us have seen too many times where, you know, people say, well, how's he going to get, he can't make a move. Well, no, he can't. He does. He finds a way. So I would be shocked, Lloydie, if he doesn't do something.
Well, and just I know you got to run, the added cherry on top of all of that. And I brought this up yesterday. I'm like, this seems like an old team. And I went, 1, 2, 3, 4, 10. And Pageau's the youngest, having just turned 30 in November. Yeah. They've got 10 guys 30 or over. 10 yeah. on their team after everything you just said as well. So we'll see. We'll see how they navigate all of that. Safe travels. Okay, still a bit of a blustery day, and it's always fun when the Sens and Leafs hook up, and we'll talk about it tomorrow.
All right. Thanks for the call, guys.
There's Dean Brown joining us on his way, getting on the bird with the team, with Gord. I'll have the call tomorrow night from Toronto, 5 o'clock pregame show and a 7 o'clock face-off. Back home to face the Habs Saturday night at Montreal Tuesday. Then it's a break. It's the All-Star slash bye week break, and won't be another Sens game until February the 11th against McDavid and the Oilers at Canadian Tire Centre. Back with the final hour in just a moment on In the Box on TSN 1200.